This episode of AetherStream is brought to you by Aetherflow Media. We would not be able to create content like this without the support of our amazing patrons.
Welcome back, guys. Tilp here. Just want to let you know that today we're tackling on Heavensward. So sit back, enjoy, and here we go.
Oh, yeah, like, because as soon as you get to Ishgard, you are, first of all, like, they don't know who you are.
No, and they don't care.
They don't care. And even worse than that, you, like, quickly kind of get, you know, your friends get called into court for being heretics. Yep. You're having to try to keep them out of jail.
Yeah, so, poor Tataru. Yeah. She's just like, she has to, they get her in there, and she's like, oh my god, I can't fight. What the hell is this? And they're just like, well, we don't care. How about you just name a champion and get over it?
And she's like, I select the Warrior of Light.
And they're okay, who's this?
Yeah, and none of the Ishgardians know at the time who the Warrior of Light is. You know, they've had closed door policy for a very long time, so, you know, they don't really understand the might of that word at the moment until they see it in action. Then they're like, oh.
Like, at that point when I did that quest, like, I just had in my, like, head, like, my character looking over at Tataru, like, Tataru, say what? I'm gonna fight for you? Like, sorry, I don't know about this.
Yep.
Oh, fine. But only because of Alphino. Anyways. Yeah, so, like, I mean, yeah, like you said, you start over, and you even actually kind of start, you know, we're a bit behind. And it's only through the good graces of, you know, one of the noble houses, Hoshafant's father.
Oh, yeah, Edmund.
That you actually kind of stay out of jail, really. If it wasn't for his favor, yeah, we would all be sitting in Ishgard jail right now. And that probably would not be any good. So, and then as soon as they kind of realize that you have this power, it didn't go the way that I initially thought it was going to go. I thought they're going to be like, hey, you're the Warrior of Light. You're the super strong dude. We have these dragons. Have you heard about them? Have you heard about the dragon problem? Like, I thought that's the way it was going to go, but no, they're like, yeah, we still don't care.
Yeah, they keep you at arm's length for a bit, and I feel like that was, like, such a good, you know, story vehicle to actually allow you to kind of get the story from both sides. Yeah. So the Ishgardians are just like, we really hate the dragons. Like, they've been bombarding us for ages, and it kind of sucks because they keep murdering all of us. And the dragons are just like, we're super effing ancient, and we remember everything like it was yesterday. My sister got murdered, so I'm really unhappy about that.
And it's only really, actually, if you think about it, as far as in the context of the story, it's only the common people who are really, like, tired of the Dragonstone War. Like, as you go through the story, you find out that the Holy See is really actually quite okay with it.
Yeah, that's perpetuate the war
going. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, who are the ones that have to clear all the rubble away? Like, the only NPCs you see cleaning away that rubble during that period are in the broom. Yeah. And it's like, and then the broom doesn't ever get fixed. It's like, wow, I see what's going on here.
It will soon. Hopefully, it will soon.
The next expansion, yeah.
We're going to fix that broom up real nice.
Which, the thing I actually liked about the story from Heavensward is the theme as far as, like, you know, you don't know necessarily, like, you know, the motivations of your leaders. Mm-hmm. Like, what are they really wanting? And you kind of had a little taste of that from, you know, the end of A Realm Reborn. So it was kind of interesting how they kind of took a different context with that in Heavensward. Yep. And also, as a quick aside, I was not sad when Hoshafant died.
Ouch.
I'm sorry, but I thought he was evil.
Oh.
I thought he was evil. When he died, I'm like, oh, I guess he's
okay,
not evil.
I was in that boat with you. I thought for a few cutscenes, especially because it's been retranslated over in the Japanese version. The Japanese version is hilarious. He is thirsty as hell.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, when he kind of does certain things that evil characters do, and then your character looks worried occasionally, I'm just like, hang on a minute, am I gonna be betrayed again? I really don't like this. And then it turns out he's really nice and he dies for you, and I'm just like, well, don't I feel like a complete and total loser for not believing in him?
Oh no, see, I was like, oh well, that kind of sucked. Okay, let's go on. So, like, I remember, like, some friends of mine, like, you're so heartless, didn't you cry when he died? Nope. Not even a little.
I cried a bit. And by a bit, I mean a lot.
Yeah, I cried a good bit. So I think I was in...
I'm heartless, I guess.
I blame the fact my dog had passed away a couple days earlier, so I think I was just really... Okay. I was, like, in a really bad spot when I played that quest, and when I saw that, that just messed me up. I was...
The waterworks. It's just like, no, I can't. Yeah, I was like, why is everyone leaving me? Like...
Okay, the sad thing is if Hashifant had been a dog and he died there, I would have been...
Yeah, probably, like...
I would have been sitting like, oh my gosh, not the dog!
Hashifant is practically a puppy.
Yeah,
he's very... He's such a good
the
boy.
The Warrior Light's number one fanboy, like...
He's somewhere, like, in the Aetherflow going, yay, go Warrior Light! Of course, like, I wonder how he's gonna think of things, like, once the Warrior of Light becomes the Warrior of Darkness.
Yeah, see, and that's...
I believe in you!
But he's always been so understanding of everything that we've had to do, and I feel like maybe he would understand, especially given Hashifant wasn't stupid by any means, mm-hmm. and I feel like, much like with him taking a chance on us and observing things from, like, a bigger picture sort of perspective, I think he would see that what we were doing was right.
Yeah, and he was a garrison commander and was in charge of every operation in Camp Dragonhead, so he was pretty high up there politically despite his lineage. But, yeah, for him...
He had to make some hard decisions.
Yeah, for him to basically drop everything responsibility-wise... At the gates of Ishgard, because they, you know, Camp Dragonhead is the only place that handles all the foreign diplomacy. You know, they get all that traffic from every other nation, and they have to decide whether, you know, all those, you know, can this come in, can this stay out, you know, what's allowed in, what's allowed out. And he probably had a lot of work to do, and he was just like, hey, buddy, let me stop what I'm doing so I can get you inside my own nation, who has had its doors closed forever, to protect you.
Yeah, no, I'm taking a real big chance on you here, but I want to do it anyway.
By the way, would you like a cup of
coffee? Yeah.
Oh.
Well, and so what really got me is, so they, like I mentioned again with the short stories, there's a short story that has him... basically speaking, post-mortem, I guess would be the term. You know, just like past, you know, this is already after everything had happened. It's happening actually during the quest that you can take. I think it's after 4.3. Yeah. I'm going to say 4.3.
So the one where you visit all of the places you, that one. Visited
the memorial quest. So this short story is taking place in that same time frame. About the same time you go to visit his grave, and
so he's floating around.
Well, he wrote a letter to the Warrior of Light after you had left for the first time to go into Dravania. He wrote a letter to you, but that letter never got to you, right? And so in the short story, you get to read this letter, and it's the most endearing thing on the planet. You know, literally Hashifant explains his motivations, why he let you in Ishgard, or why he tried to get you in Ishgard, you know, how he believed in your mission, he believed in the hope you brought people, he knew that you could do the same for Ishgard, that's why he wanted you in. And so, like, he ends up making a promise at the end of this letter that in your darkest night he would be there, and he actually keeps that promise in 4.3. Because when you're trying to take care of the Dragon Eyes, guess who's there? He's there helping you. And I don't know...
Yep, him and Yzael show up for a final battle.
That made me cry. Yeah, that did.
I'm not going to say it's a trick of the ether. They don't really like to go into depth on how souls work in the game thus far. But I really want to believe that was him keeping his promise. Because he was there when you were... Like, I mean, you were trying really hard and it wasn't working. And, oh man, that was a powerful moment in Heaven's Ward. That scene, pulling those eyes out. Like, you're just like...
Gross sobbing.
Yeah. Like, oh man, I was like... I was cheering for them, too. I was like, come on! I was like, you can do it!
Well, and because of that, actually, saying I've never had a problem with Istinian.
Istinian is awesome.
I'm one of those people. I can't get over what he did to me. Is it like a baddie dragoon and like...
It's so funny.
He was an asshole. He was a complete asshole.
It's so funny with in regards to Astinian is how he resonates with people differently depending on what you chose. So like if you started off as a dragoon, you know him as, hey, you hurt me. I had to punch you. Like how are we friends? You know, like you have that dynamic. You remembered him from the very beginning. But like in my case, I didn't actually do the dragoon quest prior to Heaven's Ward, so to me he was a complete stranger, and it's just really interesting to know that there's various like levels of interaction per player depending on what they decide to start off with when they meet Astinian.
Yeah, you're just sat there like, yeah, cool.
Yeah,
bro,
I was like, who
let's,
this?
Let's
like-
go on an adventure, and I'm sat there like, where's my apology?
See, actually, I started out as a dragoon as well, but. I changed my mind about Astinian after that whole scene with Hoshafant and Azael going up against Nidhogg where they pulled the eyes out, because I know a lot of people are kind of like annoyed the fact that he's still alive and they're like, oh, he should have died. I disagree. I like that he's actually still alive, because like you were talking about like all of that will that Hoshafant had, that Azael had, that, you know, they believe in your mission, and they're dead. They can't do anything about it now.
But Astinian is Astinian.
And he has to carry the weight of both, not only just himself and what he did and trying to make up for that, but also Hoshafant and Azael.
Yep.
I mean, if you look at him in Heavenswood, he puts aside so much of his hatred and he grows so much. Yeah, I go on like, oh, give me my apology. Why are you such a loser, Astinian? Why did you try and stab me in the face? But he grows so much. And I think... by the end there, he's talking with Yzel like she's a normal person. He's not calling her a heretic. And, you know, I think it's him that leaves flowers for her.
Yes, it is. He left flowers for her at Azu's Law.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, you see him grow and develop. Oh. And I think he believes in you as much as Hoshafant and Yzel did by the end. So he's keeping tabs on you a little bit.
Yeah, because you see him a little bit after that. He's keeping that hope alive. It's... so, and it's funny, I don't know, I keep going back to these short stories. I promise you it's just because I got Chronicles of Light, so
I need to buy
it. It's so worth it. Please consider acquiring this novel, because you will enjoy its contents. There's four new stories that aren't on the websites. So they have all the stories that are from the websites, and then four new ones. And then there's a little hint on the back about Shadowbringers, which is pretty cool. So it's definitely worth it, and there's art of all the characters, like hand-drawn art. I don't know, like I'm just gushing all over this book. It's so good. But in reference to Astinian and his growth, a minor spoiler, there's a story that you can read in Tales of the Storm, which is the one they released for Stormblood, after Stormblood's anniversary event, and they have Astinian actually goes to Sor Kai. And so those who haven't had a chance to see, or if they, you know, it's been a while, Dungeon's been out for a little bit. Sor Kai is, well, it was the home of Ratatoskr, which is the dragon that was killed by Thorin. And Ratatoskr, out of all the dragons, out of all the great worms, the seven children of Midgar Sormr, Ratatoskr had the most hope for mankind. Ratatoskr would contribute her efforts in, you know, helping them grow and build. So that's why, to the dragons, her death was the most, you know,
the betrayal was
so bad, because out of all the dragons, she was the one that loved them the most. She was the one that cared for them the most and did everything to promote their growth, and they still did what they did. And, I mean, you know, to see that kind of, you know, unnecessary move pulled by the King of Men, because he just wanted power, because once again it's that factor of greed. Nidhogg lost it. He was just like, I can't believe you, like, kill me instead. I hate you guys, but you know, you went and killed the person that cared about you the most, and I will spend the rest of my entire existence to get vengeance. And it's just
but see
sorry, oh, sorry. it it's just, that's why it's that power, you know, behind Sorkai, the concept of it. The fact that Estinian goes to Sorkai to leave flowers for Ratatoskr, they put that in the story. And, I mean, oh my goodness, he even goes, what did he say? He's like, this might not be how you expected it, but I came here to tell you the war is over. He just says that. And I was like, I start crying in my house. Like, oh, that was such a powerful scene written in the story. And, you know, he goes on, you know, Horace Vilger shows up, and Estinian's like, Snoop much? You know, like, why are you here? You know? And,
the hell are you doing about that?
Well, and Horace Vilger just wanted to express appreciation that he went out of his way to do that. And he was like, you didn't, you have to, but you, you know, you remembered my brood sister. And for that, I wish to reward you. And it's actually, it shows you where the True Blood Dragoon armor comes from, is from Sorkai. And he gets one of the sets. He receives one of the sets of the True Blood Dragoon's armor. And so Horace Vilger tells him that it needs a new name because it's a new age. And Estinian calls his armor Iceheart because it... Aww. Yeah, yes.
That's so sweet.
He calls his armor Iceheart, and he says it's in memoriam of the person that helped him feel anything other than hatred. And I was so... Yes, yes, like...
Somebody get the tissues.
That's pretty cute. And to be honest, how many people ship that? There's a lot of people. Oh, there's
so many
that.
People that ship that.
I wanted to resist shipping it, but now like that.
Yeah, here I found it. Okay, so let me read it just to make sure, because I don't want to like mess it up. But yeah, he says. So a short while later, Estinian emerged from the barracks with new armor and newfound purpose. The azure plate gleamed brilliantly as it caught the light of the midday sun. Such armor deserves a name, he declared, and I know one which befits it well. Horace Vilger stared at him expectantly. Iceheart, for it shall watch over a man ignorant of all things save how to wield a lance steeped in anger. Like, he attributes Ysael to helping him feel something else outside of that revenge he was so focused on. And
he was like, I was stuck in a cycle and she helped me, and he acknowledges that, which is so
sweet. Yeah, so his armor is called Iceheart and his lance is called Nidhogg. He and it's just to him, nice. Out of everything, I think Estinian is the major symbol of the results of ending the Dragon Song War. You know, that hatred is gone, and now man and dragon work together to protect the hope of mankind, which is you. And
but at the same time, he's not a perfect person.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
still very much scarred. He's not like, you know, all of a sudden, like, you know, doing jazz
yeah, yeah.
and tap dancing. Like, I am all better. I'm going to be perky.
No, he's
now.
Brooding yeah, and he's always hidden.
Not everybody necessarily loves him.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons why he probably works in the mm-hmm. shadows so much. You know, like, you don't see him. And actually, one thing that you actually brought to mind as far as the fact that they went after Ratatoskr.
Yeah.
Is it just me, or do you kind of get the feeling that, you know, there were some Ashians behind that?
Wait, what?
Hey, look at them eyes. Don't those look tasty?
Would it have occurred to the King of Men to do that? You know, considering they have this close friendship, would that have come, that idea have popped into their head on their own?
I think it depends on whether or not the legend's about, because you say it's, if they say it's like a legend that the dragon's power is in their eyes, I think it would depend on whether or not the elves call them elves, the Elizin and the Ishgardians took that seriously.
I believe.
But how would they even know?
I feel that? Like that knowledge was passed to them by the Ascians, because
yeah,
one of the things
could have been.
It could, you know, theory wise, I'm not going to set that as hard as stone, but the setting is that the Paragon's mission is to always spread chaos, because chaos is what allows the calamities to form it and bring the worlds back together. So, you know, Ishgard, or pre-Ishgard, so that time frame when man and dragon were friends, that was peace. That was a time where progress was made, and the Paragons don't want progress.
Yeah, Ascians took one look at that and were just like, you can't have nice things.
It's basically that, yeah, that's their mission. You can't have nice things because the world is still a fragmented, you know, patchwork of realities and needs to all be one. And so in order to do that, they have to mess things up. So I honestly feel like they don't state it directly, but I feel like the knowledge of the Dragon's Eyes, or at least the amount of power that they can get from that, was something whispered to them by the Ascians, and they took the action.
Yeah, just going by what you've seen happen before, it's just like, how do people end up knowing about objects of power? So like the Heart of Sabeek,
yes,
Ultima Weapon. It's just like, how do people find out about this
stuff?
It's
definitely, well, and the Ultima Ascians. Weapon is definitely Ascian related. You know, La Habrea was involved, you know, directly with that, and he even took over the whole thing when that weapon was activated. You know, he took everything. He took over everything despite Gaius's protestations and was like, you know, cast your spell. And, you know, it's all in that effort to stir up the ethereal currents and make them, you know, react in a way to cause the Ardor. So
yeah, destabilize everything. Mm-hmm.
They have to cause those chaotic events in order to get the worlds to join together again.
I don't necessarily think, and we're kind of going off on a little bit of a tangent here. I don't necessarily actually believe that all of the Ascians are wanting the Ardor to happen.
I can see that.
For whatever reason, I think Elidibus, you know, I was kind of thinking the other day about, like, you know, we had the Umbral Eras, we had the Astral Eras, and we're in an Astral Era right now. Correct me if
yes,
I'm
we
wrong.
Are in an Astral Era currently.
And we have, like, this kind of, like, aether building up, this light aether. Mm-hmm. Everything's kind of going out of balance. And, you know, this light aether is building up during the Astral Era. And it's going to keep on building until we have a Calamity, and then we're going to go back to an Umbral Era. So it's kind of like, as this energy builds up, eventually it kind of has to break out, it has to explode. Mm-hmm. It dissipates, and then all of a sudden we're reset to the other side. We don't really quite find that equilibrium. We don't find that, you know, balance. Yep. And I was kind of thinking about this, like, okay, equilibrium, balance, Elidibus. So I don't know. It's just kind of a wild tangent there that, and especially kind of, you know, where he doesn't seem to necessarily be as much about chaos as he is about keeping things in balance. Yes, you need a certain amount of chaos, but only so you don't have things swinging back all in one direction. You know, through ARR, through Heaven's Word, everything kind of went our way. That's why we have this excess buildup of light ether.
Elidibus also doesn't seem to be quite as much of a jerk about everything when you compare him to La Habrea. It's just like, La Habrea is like mustache twiddling, like monocle twisting, like actual villain. Whereas Elidibus is kind of like, eh. Yeah, stuff's happening. I'm either gonna help you or I'm gonna not. He's kind of very neutral and in the middle. So I still think he's bad, but he's a different type of
bad. Yeah,
it's not quite so
his
bad.
His motivations are different from the other overlords. They go as far as to give him a different title. So you got your overlords and then you got him. He's the emissary. He represents the best interests of Zodiark. Like, he's supposed to be Zodiark's voice. Whereas the Ascians, I mean, they all share that common goal. They want to restore Zodiark to his position of power. But Elidibus knows it must be done in a very balanced, you know, precise way. Whereas the overlords are like, rah, darkness. And, like, it just doesn't, you know.
They're kind of like the Joker from one of the bad
yes,
movies.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we just want to see the world
yeah,
burn.
And
it's like he has a lot of younger siblings in the other Ascians, and they're kind of running around doing the chaos thing, and he's just like, you guys need to calm down or I'm going to put you in timeout.
Yeah, and that's why he even, you know, it's alluded that there's a permission that is kind of granted to the Warrior Light to slay these Ascians, because every time you go, you know, they get to that cutscene where they're like, oh, La Habrea is dead, and Elidibus is like, that's fine. You know, there's this permission that's granted to you, but from what, you know, what it seems in the, you know, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but what it seems currently is that you've overpassed that permission. You've stepped boundaries that were placed long ago, and so now they need to take you out because you're causing the problem. So
I don't necessarily see. I don't completely agree with that because I mean, I don't think that there's any like clear directive on that, because think about at the end of the last MSQ, we have Elidibus who's in the body of Zenos, right? Mm-hmm. And we have what's his name who is in the body of the Emperor.
Well,
those are two Ashians who are lying to each other. Like, why? What the heck is going on there?
So we actually don't
why
know.
Why would they bother with that?
Well, it's I know. So Solas's motives are very different, I believe, because he was done. From what he says, he was done, and he was brought back. Like, Elidibus asked him to come back, and he was annoyed. He was like, I should be the one to sigh, you know? Because he's like, why am I here again? I thought I did my job. His job being starting the Garlean Empire. He's like, I did everything I needed to do. Your Garleans are perfect. Look at them. They're causing all the problems. Look at them. They're perfect. You know, like, petting them on the shoulder. But he's called back because Elidibus needs his help. And, you know, they blame it all on La Habrea. They're like, man, it's La Habrea's fault that I'm here. And so it's just this really interesting, you know, hierarchy system with the foundations of the universe that you're just barely grasping onto. You kind of understand they know more than you do. They have a lot more information than you do. And they've always presented the Ascians as such, like these super intelligent, you know, menacing beings from another world who are just like, hey, stop what you're doing because you're messing things up. And you don't feel it because you're just like, I'm doing the right thing. Why am I messing things up? There's just like, you know, this really interesting kind of like a factor that they present. And that's why I think...
Who's meat puppeting Solas right now? Because I know he's got an Ascian in him.
Yeah, so Solas...
Because they're all like, ah, look at all these clones. I can just jump to whichever one I want. Is it... It's not Emmett Selch, is
that's
it?
The that's the guess. That's the guess. It's Emmett Selch, but...
They think it's Emmett Selch.
Because we don't have any other... You know, we don't have any other Ascians that we know who are Sourceborn. And they presented those three, you know, Elidibus, La Habrea, and Emmett Selch. And so since...
And he's mentioned as being active or floating around somewhere.
Yeah, they don't know where he's at, so they're assuming... they're assuming that Solas is Emmett Selch, but we don't, you know, until they show... They're probably just going to tell us and Shadowbringers who it is, but for right now, that's only a guess. And...
So... Kind of talking about the chaos at the Garlean, so that kind of moves us on to Stormblood. Yep. So we
get it does.
It does, yes. So at the end of Heavensward, we have this great, I actually quite loved it, this great kind of dungeon and storyline with, oh goodness, what's Bilbert. His name?
The Griffin.
As far as where we end up going to Belisar's Wall. We end up battling our way up there, fighting him. He ultimately kind of sacrifices himself to summon a primal, theoretically.
And a bunch of other people.
Still a little salty that it was Shinryu, because I'm still trying to figure out, like, okay, all of those people who are Alamegan born, and they're thinking about a dragon.
So...
I think they needed to didn't they need to put Omega in there? And the only, because Omega and Shinryu throughout the series are so tied together, they kind of had to do one to be able to get the other.
It's more, yeah, it's definitely a part, in part because of the reference. Shinryu and Omega were released in Final Fantasy V originally. And so the trope is that every time you beat them, they get pulled into a dimension and they show up somewhere else. So, but they're constantly fighting. That's the idea. And so they definitely wanted to keep, I would say they would definitely want to keep that nostalgia. Final Fantasy XIV's devs are very strict about when they're borrowing from other Final Fantasies, they want to maintain that nostalgia. They try to make as little changes as possible. Now, the names will stick and the references will stick, but they're not going to try to, like, they don't want to change the core foundations of those references. So that's why Shinryu and Omega show up at the same time. Now, what I think in regards to the dragon appearance, there's actually... So it's kind of like piecemeal. There's various kind of clues they drop on to why Shinryu took the form of a dragon, whereas it could have been anything else. Honestly, when I was going through MSQ and with my FC, most of us, I'm pretty sure all of us, made the theory that it was going to be Rolgar that was going to pop out.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much everyone thought it was going
to
be Rolgar.
Because it just seemed to make so much more sense. And, you know, it's Alamegan. The Alamegans worship Rolgar. They tried to summon Rolgar in the past, you know, to save them.
I did have actually like a slight hesitancy that it would be Rolgar, but I'll let you finish and then I'll
yeah, and that. they mentioned it, so I was just like, it's going to be Rolgar. And then that dragon popped out, and I was like, what? But I was very confused.
Yeah, you're like, huh?
But I think, you know, so the part of that piecemeal clues that they dropped, you know, Ilber did say he wanted something worse than Bahamut. He has distinct memories of that time frame when Bahamut broke out of the shell. So he's probably envisioning that.
Yeah, Bahamut is like the worst. He's like, oh, I want you all to suffer. Here's the worst thing I can think of.
And
it's not his god. It's the being from the calamity.
Yeah, he wanted to cause something that would get the attention, you know, just knock out the Garleans. And so, you know, the other piecemeal hint we get is actually in Alphascape. The third fight, you end up fighting Midgardstormer, but a data replica of him. And it's the original Midgardstormer from the Dragonstar, you know, before he showed up to Hydaelyn. So he looks completely different. And Cid makes an off comment after you beat the fight. He makes an off comment in this quest line where he's like, you know something interesting? He looked like Shinryu. And you're like, what? You know, like you like click onto that because you're like, what? And he explains that. So he has a theory that. So this is going to kind of get some like semi-philosophical. He has a theory that in the unconscious of every individual, as far as the Eorzeans are concerned, there's an archetypal image of the dragon, and he feels that that archetypal image is Midgardstormer, because Midgardstormer is the father of dragons. You know, he preceded all of them. So he thinks that, you know, a person when envisioning a dragon will first go to Midgardstormer in form before, you know, any other assumptions are made. And, you know, you have to take into account Ilbert never saw a dragon aside from, you know, the stories of Bahamut. I will have to go and check if I don't believe he was at Cartonel.
Or the Battle of Silvertis.
But
guys.
Yeah, he didn't see those dragons, but he knows they existed. He knows that they did the damage they did. So he's envisioning, and in that process of vision, Cid also made that theory that in that process of vision, he pulled upon the unconscious idea of the dragons, and that's why it looks like the way it does.
That helps it make a little bit more sense.
So it's more of...
Because stylistically they do look similar, because the mane and everything.
Mane, the fire, all of that, the powers, the length, because the dragons were sinuous. It
They were more like worms. Mm-hmm. Versus,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, the great worm instead of you know, like a Durgan.
Yeah, an actual Durgan. But so that's my thing. It's very piecemeal. You have to kind of like find the distinct references in various locations to help explain why Shinryu is the way he is, why he was summoned the way he was. I have the last one I kind of drew. This one's more of myself. Not, I wouldn't say it's so much a hint or a clue, but kind of like a reference maybe. Because, so when you do the Ivalice quests, you know, in Ridd Around the Lighthouse, you have to fight Yasmot, right? Yasmot is also described as a dragon. And Yasmot was created from the Arasite via Begominen's desire to end the Garlean Empire. So if Begominen wanted to end the Empire, and Ilbert wanted to end the Empire, and both of them with those desires created dragons from it, there's some sort of hidden legend.
Trend.
Yeah, there's a trend. They're creating out of the ether dragons to help solve their problems.
Like, what is the most powerful thing that I can think
to beat,
of?
It's, and it's a dragon.
The father of the dragons.
So that's why I think in a kind of like a subtle way, that's why we have Yasmot and then we have Shinryu. They're created via the same desire. The only difference is that Begominen becomes the host of that desire and becomes Yasmot himself. And then Shinryu existed outside of that, but it took their souls as sacrifice. So...
So we could be looking at some kind of like world building type thing. So
there's some story
some
of an
ancient type lore.
And it honestly might be in part due to the Battle of Silvertier Skies. The Garlians were stopped by a dragon. So they probably see the dragon as the ultimate answer to fighting the Garlians. And so they create these draconic saviors, you know, in a way, to the missions of vengeance against the Empire.
Yeah, Mikotsuma did do a good job of tying up the Agrius, like a very good job.
He's still there.
Like, well, that's not going to fly anymore. He's still there.
That's interesting. As in Agrius does kind of go back to the whole evil
thing. Yeah.
One additional theory I had regarding why Ralgir didn't show up is it had been established in the lore previously that, especially through Bahamut, that which is already summoned cannot be resummoned. That's one of the reasons why they trapped him in the moon. Excuse me. Is they kind of kept him in this constant state of being
summoned. Yeah, the prayer.
And they use that. Yeah. So my theory is if Ralgir and all of these other gods are already kind of, you know, summoned somewhere, then they cannot be resummoned. So you kind of have to go to whatever else is available, you know, Shinryu, what have you. And especially, like, you know, with all of the prayer and stuff like that, that, you know, even during the Battle of Cartano, they summoned the power of the 12, but the 12 themselves did not appear.
No, they didn't show up, so we either can't summon them for whatever reason, or they're already around somewhere.
Yeah, and even then, I mean, they called it the power of the 12, but I mean, how much of it was the power of the 12 versus all of the, you know, the races' desire to actually just survive? Yep. So, because, again, nothing was summoned, they just had this big giant sigil in the sky, and all of that belief actually coalesced in Louis Swan, which is one of the reasons why he became the Phoenix.
Yeah, and he even says, like, with his final words, let Eorzea be born anew, and the power of the Phoenix restored the nation. Like, the nation shouldn't have been there. Like, there was a giant flaming, you know, meteor heading for it, and it would have destroyed everything, because, you know, Bahamut was casting that final spell. But Louis Saw, you know, diverted that energy into creation rather than destruction. And so that's why you kind of see just like this scar-torn land. It's still here because, you know, Louis Saw took the prayers of all men and then wished it so. So it's really cool.
So, yeah. And that's just, I still think that, you know, one of my tin hat lore theories is that the 12 are all summoned primals.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're primals.
I'm holding on to that, and I am going to ride that theory until the wheels fall off. Going into Stormblood, to me, that would be kind of my explanation as far as why Ralgir didn't show up.
Okay.
Yeah, and then also, like, what you kind of explained, that makes perfect sense. That, if they had actually kind of included that in more of the story, that would be much more.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's really just like it's piecemeal hints. Like, you have to play through the whole thing and, you know, get the story as it goes, but it's easily missed. And so, you know, if someone just does MSQ and doesn't finish AlphaScape, they miss out on that reference to Shinryu's form. If they don't do the Ivalice raids, they don't notice that Begominen pretty much did the exact same thing that Ilbert did and became a dragon himself. You know, it's those small little things that you miss out when you, like, you're not able to do all the content all at the same time.
Okay. So, one of the things, we're actually running quite a bit longer than what we normally do. So, do you guys
want making to up for last week?
We are. Do you want to continue on, or do you want to try to actually save the talk about Stormblood and what we could possibly expect in Shadowbringers for another episode?
We could do another episode about that stuff. I think so. I think that'd be pretty good.
Yeah, because, I mean, especially there's so much to talk about that I don't think that we're going to get through all
there's
of that.
There's a lot of tinfoil hatting.
There's a lot of tinfoil hatting that we can do. So, all right. So we're going to save the retrospective of Stormblood for our future episode, as well as kind of really get into the nitty gritty as far as how we feel a lot of these threads from the previous expansions are going to continue on in Stormblood.
Or if they're not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I really think that a lot of them are going to kind of come to a head in some really surprising and interesting ways.
I have, yeah, because like, they said that on the panel, didn't they? They wanted to tie up some of those loose ends and fix it.
And I think actually, I mean, I don't know. I really believe that going to like actually the first is probably the only way that we can like step back and get the bigger picture. But we're going to save all of that for another episode. So please look forward to it.
And with that, guys, that ends today's podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. Enki, Croton, Dylan, you guys did awesome. Thank you for doing all this way ahead of schedule. Like 5 months ahead now. So thank you guys again for doing that. And I just wanted to add a little extra note here, kind of be real with you. We are actually on Twitter now. So if you guys want to come say hi to us, you can find us over at AetherStreamPC. That's AetherStreamPC. PC is standing for podcasts. I'm going a little too much there, but yeah, if you guys want to check out, probably not going to be doing too much of the behind-the-scenes stuff, but we are going to be posting some extra content. We're going to post blurbs from podcast highlights. And, you know, we're also trying to experiment with other ideas. So if you guys come across something that you guys enjoy, please let us know either at Aetherflow Media Discord or on Twitter. So with that, guys, we're going to call it for today. We wish you all a wonderful eve.
AetherStream is part of Aetherflow Media, a community-based project with a focus on Final Fantasy XIV. Aside from this podcast, we produce web content and our magazine, Aetherflow. And if you like what you see and hear, consider joining our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/aetherflowmedia. All funds go towards providing you with the best possible content that we can create.